board without quorum, there's only one item to vote on, so we'll just do that. We'll do the meeting minutes.
As we get the next person. Oh, yeah, we might be lost, so, huh?
Oh, we have somebody coming.
Okay.
There's Tom. We now have quorum.
Give me a second.
Okay, so we will go ahead and get this meeting started. And we will start with introductions. So I'll start. I'm Adam Kravitz, community member and Outsiders In. And we'll go.
Jamie Spinelli, I'm an outreach worker at CMRC SNW.
I'd also like to say that Jamie has been selected to fill the District 1 low-income representative position. She's not officially on the board yet. We're going through the nomination process and then go through the county, as all of you know. And so she should be a full member as of the January meeting. But of course, we always want our board members and potential and new board members to come to as many meetings as possible. So we're glad to have you here. Thank you.
Janet Clark County.
Beth Landry, Clark County.
Hey, good morning. I'm Doug Boff, City Council member of La Center, representing Clark County District 2.
I'm Emily Green. I'm Community Representative District 3, and I work for Evergreen Public Schools.
I'm Hillary Pepula. I'm Community Representative District 4, and I work for the Vancouver Housing Authority.
My name is David Poland, and I represent the deaf community in Clark County, and I now have a job over Clark College at Disability Support Services.
My name is Tom Breitbach. I'm a chair.
Good morning. Alicia Topper, Clark County Treasurer and Representative District 3.
Rebecca Rice, Clark County.
Michael Torres, Clark County staff.
And we have one guest.
And Jennifer.
Okay. Check it. We have already done, so approval of September's minutes. Did everybody review them and were able to? Is there any additions or amendments? So we get a...
I motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you
so much.
Second.
Thank you. So, no opposed? Okay. We are moving right along. So, Rebecca, nominations?
Hi, yeah, it is that time. So, our executive team goes for the calendar year. So, next year we will, at the January meeting, we will elect a new executive committee. So we're here looking for nominations. You can nominate yourself or you can nominate another member. Bridget is our current chair. Lydia is our vice chair. And Adam is our current secretary. Bridget and Adam can remain in their same positions. And then Lydia will be transitioning off the board at the end of this year. So we at least need one new person on the executive committee. We try to have a balance of community elected and low income reps in the executive committee where it's possible, but it doesn't have to be that way, but we do try to get a balance. So we'll accept nominations here in the meeting, or you can email me after the meeting, and then I'll get that slate out in the reminder meeting for the January meeting, and then we will vote specifically at the January meeting. So is there anyone interested to be on the executive team, or is there more information you'd like to know about what it takes to be on the executive team?
I have interest.
Fantastic. Is there a position that you're interested in?
Well, if Bridget is looking to do something else, I would be interested in chair.
Okay. Anyone else?
I would like it if you would email us more information about the opening positions so we can read about and see if it fits with us.
I do have a document that's about the executive position, so I can email that out.
Thank you.
I might be interested in going to vice chair.
For vice chair. And Adam can attest, as the secretary, there's not much extra that you do except for sign the minutes. Janet puts the minutes together for us, and so the secretary is not actually taking the minutes. They're just reading them over. In advance and signing off on them as the official minutes for the meeting.
Rebecca, do we have a full membership for low-income representatives?
Once Jamie is on the board, board, as soon as Jamie's on the board, we're losing Lydia. So I'll be putting it out there again. But we do have David as an at-large member.
Okay.
So we do have four low-income representatives on the board. So if you are interested and maybe a little shy, that's totally fine. Just go ahead and email me, and I'll get that document out to everybody so you can see the additional information. We leave for the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance Ending Homelessness Conference today, so it will not be today. It will most likely be Friday or Monday when we get back in the office.
That's fine. And when do we need to make up our minds if we wanted to?
If you can let us know 2 weeks before the next meeting so that I can get it in the email out for the reminder of the meeting. So there's still about 6 weeks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next item is task force updates. I skipped it.
You're good.
Back to Rebecca on the CAP work plan.
So each year I put together a work plan for the year, what we're going to do during the meetings. There's a few items that we always have to do, some sort of reporting, the legislative updates. The board has mentioned that they really like getting at every meeting. And we have our task force updates that we do. So those are done at every meeting. The City of Vancouver gives us an update on the Affordable Housing Fund at each meeting. But we have some leeway in some of those meetings and stuff that we can do. In the past, we've brought in different programs and have them give updates on how they're doing. We didn't want to do it this year because we were in that transition year of doing the RFA, and then there, you know, some of them are brand new programs. But if that's something that you would like to start doing again next year, what I can do is every other meeting I would have some program from the Homeless Crisis Response System. The next meeting I would do some program from the Community Action side. And they would come in and give a 20 to 30 minute presentation, give you a little bit more information about what's going on in those programs, how they're meeting their outcomes so far, and just kind of a general overview. We could also do different types of trainings if that's what you would be interested in. I just wanted to get some ideas before I put that together for adoption at the January meeting.
I think it would be excellent to have some of the newer contracts, especially if we had new agencies. I know we had Clark College was one of them for the financial management. I think it'd be great to hear from some of the newer.
And I can definitely put those more closer to the beginning of the. The Clark College one, they unfortunately have not been able to do the program quite yet. They had turnover in the program. Their financial wellness coach accepted the new position, and they were having a little hiring freeze. They are about to hire somebody now, so that program I would probably wait just a little bit so that they could get some time working in the actual program. But I could definitely bring in the food bank, who that program's been a long-running program,
right?
And things like that. So is that something that you would like me to do, is just do program updates, or is there something, trainings, or?
What kind of trainings have you done in the past that you think that in our decisions?
So the last year and a half, we focused a lot on best practices to get ready for the request for application so that you would understand the terminology when reading the applications. But it's kind of open to what kind of trainings we can do. The county is doing a lot of equity work right now, so we can look at doing things like that. It's kind of wide open. There's been a big push for equity work in our department and learning and how we can take an equity lens approach to all of our programs and then help our programs take more of an equitable approach in their services also. So I could look at those types of trainings or if there's anything that you guys would like to see. We have the January meeting where I've gotten some feedback about doing some of the training stuff that we'll talk a little bit later in the agenda about to get a little bit more fine-tuned on what we're looking for in those trainings, but we're open.
town. You guys had voted on stuff and passed stuff, and there's other people maybe were upset because they didn't like some of the things that was proposed. So I was trying to think about in the future, the next time something like that happens, maybe we were missing some information. I wasn't here at that time. And I was just trying to think, well, what kind of information other organizations could give us so we can make sure that whatever we vote on and recommend for the community to do is the best possible for the people that need help.
Okay, and we will, once we close to the next RFA, the request for application, we will definitely start looking at doing a lot more trainings again that are really focused on the applications and the process. So when we get closer there, we will definitely do that. So it sounds like doing programs updates and maybe throwing in a training or two sounds like the way the board would like me to work towards the next work plan. Okay, that's what I will do.
And pizza?
I can't provide you food at Tribes. Except for the day-long meeting, we will have food there.
I made the effort, that's what.
Yes.
We had a few new people come in. Do we want to do introductions on the three people that everybody knows everybody, but just in case.
I want to apologize for being late. Traffic was horrendous for some reason and the parking, so I left early this morning because I was late last time. So I apologize and thank you for taking over. I'm Bridget McLean and I'm chair of the board. Somewhat embarrassing, but the chair's late.
I'm Lydia. Sorry I was late too. Oh. Same reasons. A lot of fog in North County. I'm the vice chair, I think, and this is my last meeting after 9 years of being on the board. So
you think?
And I'm Peggy Sheehan. I work for the city now.
Next item. I'm just going to keep going, Bridget, because you're still catching up.
Perfect.
Okay. Is task force updates. Oh, it's actually going to be on me anyway, so.
So, I'm here. So, what I want to say is I have handed over all of the advocacy task force responsibilities. The group decided that Adam would take over as chair of it. So,
Take it away.
Yay.
Okay, so advocacy task force is looking for more people. I believe that we can take one or two more.
If we have 12, we go up to six.
Okay, and there's three currently, so we are looking for more members. The more members, the more blood, the more opinions, the more thoughts and energy can go into whatever it is we decide to focus on. Currently, what we are focusing on is narrowing our focus onto items and actionable things that we can do. So a couple of thoughts and suggestions were just keeping it very simple and going towards letter writing on certain subjects and then making sure those are sent to the people that we want to hear us. So instead of being really broad and not having so many different subjects to talk about, we'd like to narrow it to a couple, two, three subjects and then do a concentrated effort, do something. So my focus is that let's do something, anything, and let's get our voice heard. We are a powerful body, and there's just no reason why we can't collectively, say stuff. And the idea is to bring whatever the advocacy task force does to the bigger board for their review and hopefully approval. People can have the choice to sign on, and then we can send those out. So that's kind of where we're at. So if anybody feels compelled to want to join in on that and have some things they want to write people about and use the board's presence as part of that platform, come to the meeting. And the meeting is on the first Tuesday of every other month that we're not having a meeting here. So the opposite month, first Tuesday at the diner. So that's Advocacy Task Force update.
What time do you meet, Adam?
Hmm?
What time do you meet?
Is it 11? Yes, 11.
11. And the diner on Evergreen?
It's on MacArthur. Tower Mall. Next to River Maiden Coffee.
Oh. So DuckTales?
No, it's actually a new place. It's called The Diner, and it's a nonprofit that funds food, Meals on Wheels. So all tips go towards Meals Toward Wheels. So it's actually a really cool little diner. They have good food, yes.
And I'll send the current advocacy task force members a reminder to check in about scheduling. David, with your new position, so you just make sure that that first Tuesday is still going to work. So if you are interested in participating in the task force, please email Adam or myself, and we'll just loop you in on the scheduling email conversation to see if you have any input around when you might be available. Laura Ellsworth with Council for the Homeless is also interested in participating, so she'll likely be at the next meeting as well.
Okay.
As just a community member, not like a, so she won't count for the limit that the cap is increasing.
Okay, and then that goes to back to Rebecca on community needs update.
So the community needs assessment task force has been meeting since September, and they were fantastic in helping us put together the survey that we have. So this is what the survey looks like in English. It's very similar to what we did last time, but we made a couple pretty big changes to it. One of the things that we changed was we used to ask about the needs of the adults and then the needs of the youth in the household, but they got confusing. So we decided to expand from asking about the top three needs and categories and went to the top five needs, but then also asked them what the barriers were about them accessing those needs. So we're trying to find more of those gaps in services. We also separated out, one of the categories was physical and behavioral social behavioral health. So now we actually have a physical health section and then we have a behavioral health section. We did that for a couple of reasons. One, there were a lot of needs that we wanted to include in that section, and so it just got overwhelming. And even with five options, and I think there was they could choose one in four or one in five out of the total number of options. So it limited it down to the number of needs or concerns, and then gave them actually more options to say things that were might be a concern for their family. We also added in some demographic information, like the highest level of education, the number of youth, the number of seniors in their household, so we can get a little bit more breakdown of what the family dynamics are. So those are some of the changes that we made. We also have it online in English, Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese. Unfortunately, SurveyMonkey does not support Chukis, so I'm pretty disappointed in them right now, but we have the four languages available online that people can go in and do the survey, and then we have five languages in hard copy available. The survey opened on Friday. I have 70-something responses so far online, but I noticed that some of them were just blank, so I need to go and kind of filter through those and see what's going on there. But so far, we're getting notification and people are getting access to it. A news release went out from the county, and it also went out on the county's Facebook page and the Twitter page. So please take a look and share those to your networks. I sent an email to the board, but I also sent an email to over 100 contacts in the community for different programs, some new, some that had helped us with the last survey. There will be a posting on Nextdoor. It won't come out until like next week. Bridget, I know you'll pay attention and get that one out for us with your networks there. We had another survey in our unit for the consolidated plan, and so they didn't want to put two notices about surveys back to back. So since the survey is open for 90 days, giving it a week before they post one to Nextdoor made sense, so that's not to reduce confusion. One of the other things that was recommended is to make sure that we notify people that this is not the U.S. Census, because we are gearing up to doing the census. We really want people to know that this is a local survey for us to find out about their needs, and then to also please complete the census for the national data. That's really important too. This is a flyer that goes along with the survey. So essentially, all of the programs that we're working with will get a packet that has all five languages, the flyer in all five languages, postage paid return envelopes, and a return postage paid return label. So if they collect them in-house and just want to send us a packet back at a time. There's a letter in there that also says how to contact me if they need more surveys, and if they know of any community meetings that I should attend. I'm set up to go to several meetings already, but I want to get as many community meetings on my agenda as possible so we can get the survey out there as far and wide as we possibly can. We received 1,165 responses last time, and my goal is to get more this time. So, are there any questions about the survey piece for the community needs assessment?
I was just wondering, did we not last year approve that survey in the bigger group as being supported by the Community Action Advisory Board?
I don't know if it went.
Especially because we had a meeting so soon, I thought I would have added weight to it. And the second thing is whether members should be out there pushing the survey to the various groups that they're part of. We did build a list of organizations people were connected to, so that's just an idea, rather than assuming staff will get everywhere.
On your first question, Bridget, the way it's worked in the past, at least from my recollection, you can correct me, Rebecca, is that the Community Needs Assessment Task Force, so that subgroup of us, have developed that survey, and then we've always brought it to the board for approval.
You know, I honestly don't remember.
I know we've done that in the past. I can't remember whether it was this time or in the past, but I know we've done that in the past.
We relied heavily on the CNA task force. That's why it was important for us to get members in there, and we were trying to do a different timeline to getting it out there. There's no requirement that the board actually approve it, but we really want that participation through the task force to give us that feedback to get it out.
I just suggest that we do that in the future just because it maintains the official record of the board having supported it. And that's our minutes are what counts in the official record. So, next step.
I agree with Bridget.
Yeah, just so you guys know, I'm not against that at all. I think it'd be great. Remember, if we meet, if this group meets once every 2 months, sometimes when we're trying to work out timelines, it gets
a little bit
hard.
It was,
but absolutely, that'd be great.
It only occurred to me because they were so close that it would have been so easy to
sure.
do this time.
But I think you can even do an approval by email.
With open public meeting laws, we're not allowed to do anything like that. It has to be brought to an actual meeting. So we couldn't vote on it via email, but I could have definitely sent it out for review of the full board, and I apologize.
We would not be opposed to special meetings if that helps move things along, too.
I want to acknowledge the fact that the changes that were done kind of reflect things that we ran into when we were doing the funding request, and then there was that leftover money, and then there was all that question about, well, why is food the highest need? So that is reflected in the changes. So I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, when we did the last process, as I was going through things, I was taking notes like, okay, this didn't work the last time, so we want to change that, or suggestions on improving it, and then the department going through a lot of the equity work that we're doing, making sure that we really incorporate that into
you
the
said,
survey.
You said 90 days, Rebecca. What is the closing date?
January 31st.
I The other thing, Rebecca, I know in the past, timing didn't work out to get it out into schools as much because it came out during the summer. And so now that it's out during the winter months when school is definitely in session, I would really recommend working.
So I have a packet for you as the homeschool liaison for Battleground.
All I'm saying is, not just our district.
I can't go through the schools. I can't just go through generally through the schools because it's not the target audience that we're looking for, and the school districts only want to send out if they can send it to every single student. So then I'm going to
have it available in Family Resources.
Yes, so I have all the Family Resources on my,
right.
And then the homeschool liaisons. So both of those avenues.
Okay.
And I'm also trying to get in connection with the English language learning counselors also as another avenue of getting into the schools.
Cool.
So, Madam Chair, to round out the discussion on the survey and having the board review it in advance, just so I'm clear, you're not asking for an approval by this board because that would hold up the work of the county. You're just asking for an acknowledgement and a support action by the board, correct?
This is the document that really guides our work for the next few years in allocating funding or whatever. And it seems to me that there should be an official acknowledgement by this group of the document of the survey that's going out, because that's the basis of our work. I mean, it's formed by members of this group and the advocacy, the CNA task force, but still to be an official action, I think it should come from here as a recommendation to the county that this is the document we want.
So
I got the wording wrong there, yeah.
No, well, and so just remember in terms of process and approval that the document, the community needs assessment itself, like the survey informs it, it's part of creating it, but it's not the community needs assessment itself.
Right.
And that document,
yes,
is absolutely coming to the board for not just review, but approval and adoption. So just
right.
And not saying that, like, I think we would be happy to share the survey in advance. You know, we're not opposed to approval of the survey, but just remember the context of you will approve the community needs assessment before it gets, you know, that's part of the finalization process before it gets published, before it gets distributed as a community needs assessment itself, that you will be approving that.
Do we have a copy of it here today?
The 2016 CNA?
The last CNA or the survey itself. I just brought one copy, but I do have your packet, so I borrow it. This is your packet, so you can take that.
Great.
The only thing that's not included in that packet is the Vietnamese surveys because we found a major typo, and so I needed to have them reprinted. I don't have them today. I wasn't as concerned, but I can get those to you once I have them.
Okay, you may mention this already, but what is the timeline between the survey collection and the needs assessment being put together?
The survey or the full needs assessment has to be adopted at our November meeting next year. So the plan, once we get the survey, we'll close it out. We'll start looking at the data, but I've reached out to the data consultant that we used last time for them to look at all of our data, look for bias, and then start helping us compare responses by different subpopulations, which will help inform our community needs assessment also. And then we'll take that information from them. We'll start creating the documents and display information for community forums, along with we're hoping to do small group discussions with people who are struggling financially specifically. We'll do some more work in that area also. So that'll be the next big push will be when we get to that stage to those community forums. Then we'll take all the information from that, synthesize it. We'll look at the other community assessments that are done in the community by the Healthy Youth
Public Health, like, you know, Peace Health, Southwest Washington Workforce Development Center, basically any, RCT, like any community assessments that have been done in like the past, you know, like since the last one, you know, we look through and identify identify things that are aligned with what we're finding in our survey responses and in our community forums, and things that are outliers. So supporting or otherwise informing, and we'll be referencing any other study or survey that we have looked at and drawn in the assessment as well.
Can I just add to that? This probably is one of the more boring things that we do, to be totally honest with you, but it really does impact how the budgeting happens and how some of those decisions are made. So I would really just encourage everybody to get it out to anybody and everybody that would be a good fit for completing this. I'll pick on food banks for a minute. Let's just say that food banks are all about getting these surveys completed. Then it totally makes sense that food would be our number one need, right? I mean, can anybody see kind of the correlation? The data is only as good as what we get out there. So I would just really encourage everybody to, even though it's not the fun part of our jobs, to get this out there because it guides so much of the work that we do.
And I will say we have Ezra with the Community Foundation of Southwest Washington on the CNA task force. And she had a copy of the last CNA and with notes in it and suggestions, and was excited to be on the task force to help us move this along. And she said that they use that CNA when they're making decisions. And the programs that we fund are using this as data for them when they're applying for different grants. So it's not just used by us, it is used by the community. It is very important and very appreciated out in the community. So any help I can get getting the word out there is greatly appreciated. Like I said, we want to do better than we did last time. That's always our goal, is how did we do last time and what can we do to make it better this time.
So what about members taking it to their neighborhood associations?
I'm on the agenda to talk with the Neighborhood Association Clark County Council, NACC, yes, to get it out at those neighborhood associations. Also, I'm happy to come to the smaller neighborhood associations if you guys want to go to them and talk about it. I can get you more surveys, so just let me know what you're looking at, if you think 10 surveys or 20 surveys. The big thing to remember is that this is really designated for people who are living in poverty. So that is who we want to fill out the survey, not our middle income or upper income, because it skews.
Rebecca, is there an online link that we could send, that we could email to people?
Yes, so it should be an email I sent to you, to the board. It's also on the flyers, and it's on the surveys themselves. So anywhere they have an access to getting to the online version, except for Inchu Keys.
And how soon do we have to have everything completed that they need to be done? Because like the neighborhood association in my neighborhood and where I live, mm-hmm. is there?
Yeah, so we're accepting the surveys until January 31st. So we're 90 days, hoping that we can get the information out there. And Nextdoor was really big last time for people responding to the survey, too. So hopefully the online media stuff that we're doing, which you'll see periodic posts, reminders to do them. So hopefully that will also, as many as we can get online means less data entry for staff in the office. So.
Every time I think about this, like the food issue that Lydia just mentioned, there's no way around it because we're collecting data on need. What we don't match up is resources available to meet that need. So we have food banks and we have pretty good access to food in multiple ways, but people still rate it as one of the highest needs. So that when we come to do funding, we're still looking at the CNA saying food is a high priority, but in fact it's not necessarily where the service gaps are.
Well, and that's why.
So I always worry about this survey in that respect.
That's why we broke it down when we did the request for application in the different categories. So it would be touching. We were trying to fund something in each of the categories. Housing is done through the homeless crisis response system, so we don't use the community action dollars for housing most of the time. And so that was part of, we know that employment, we know that housing, we know and guest food is a high need. But that's one of the ways we were trying to kind of take a look at other areas. So if we did have a lot of responses like we did with the food bank. But again, like Lydia was saying, if people are saying they need food, then there's a reason that they're saying. And then we also have the research and consultant look for that bias.
Does the research consultant also review the questionnaire?
Yes, and they provided us feedback. We actually got really positive feedback on our last survey, which is part of the reason we didn't significantly overhaul. But yes, they took a look at the survey and gave us some feedback. One of the things that is included from them is on the back, to get participation in the forums and the small group discussions, they can actually indicate on the survey that they would be interested in doing that, and that gives us a pool of people to contact.
And one other thing I will emphasize that Rebecca did mention is we do check for statistical bias from the origin of the respondents. So, if the survey says, if we ask, where you got the survey, I got it from a food bank. We look at all the responses from the food banks and look at what is the bias in the priorities from the different things to see if there's a statistical, if it creates a statistical deviation, in the responses. So that's one of the things that we do. And we had a very, very light bias last time. It was not enough to skew the information. The other thing, last time, I think we distributed, I want to say it was either 65 or 85 different organizations throughout the community. And this time, we've almost doubled it.
We're over 100, so.
Yeah. So, we've taken all the information we learned. Last time, the 2016-2017 effort was by far the most robust community needs assessment effort this county has ever done. And, we've taken lessons learned from that, and we've actually significantly improved it.
So, yeah. I'm still rounding back to Bridget's original request that the board approve the survey. I almost feel like, and this is just my own opinion, I've only been on the board for a few months, but I almost would feel more comfortable validating the data that you're presenting to include in the final assessment, because that to me is more important than the document itself. As long as there's someone who's a professional, as well as you who's a professional, that are writing it, it's being distributed, I think it's the data that I would want to be like, yes, we think this is great data. It was collected in a way that is, standard research protocol, and we want to use this for our guiding document for the next 3 years, rather than the survey itself.
I can understand that, but I'm not implying that's the case, because I think the survey's really good. But unless you know what questions were asked, the data wouldn't matter. Because if you miss some chunk, and I'm certainly never implying that that has happened, but it's the questions you ask that matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do need the professional analysis of your responses, but if you don't.
But that's what the task force is doing, right? That's why we have the task
True.
Force. And the
but the
board.
Task force is a body
of the board.
Of the board. Yeah. So just as the advocacy task force doesn't initiate a new policy position and go for it, they do it consistent with the mission and the past decisions of this board, where it's consistent with what our goals and intent is.
I can see that.
So
I can see that.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to raise this, but it just seems to should lend it more weight when it comes here, and we're all aware of it and how it's going and what the content is prior to it being out there. I mean, I've got a neighborhood association meeting this week. Somebody happened to ask, heaven forbid they wouldn't, but if they did, as a member of the board, I would want to know about it and have seen it. And
well,
yes, if I read your email, maybe I
and I do you know, want you guys to be informed to have a general idea of what is going on. I don't expect you to know the survey inside and out and what is being asked and all of those minor details. Melanie, yes, she's on the standing task force. She should know every inch of this survey. No, I'm just kidding. But I do want you to, if there's somebody that has questions, say, contact Rebecca at Clark County Community Services, and she can answer every single one of your questions. I will be, you know, taking that role of the expert on this.
Yeah.
Of doing this and talking people through all of that information. And my information is on the flyers. It is not on the survey.
I would like to say something, actually two things. I'm looking over the form because she graciously let me look at one of them. And I'm going to say I approve of it because I noticed, for example, what is a primary language used in your home, and ASL is in it. And it doesn't say what do you speak in your home, like a lot of forms will do. So that's good. And it has an other box because it's really important that we have an other box because this, we are not limited to what the majority of people speak. There are people that do not use ASL. They use a different sign language because they're an immigrant from another country, and that data is important. So when we circle other, I hope that it's explained to them, especially if they're deaf, that they can write in additional comments which language, not just other, which one is it. But yeah, I'm looking over it, and I totally understand what she's saying. It's everybody's brain works differently, and some people, they get really focused in stuff that makes a lot of red tape, and people get bogged down and say, we just want to take action. That's another type of person. You know what I'm talking about. but it is, I agree with you that it is important because even though we have these people that have the best intentions and a lot of skills and they've listened to minority group leaders and stuff, when they create something like a forum, even if they're just fixing an old form, it's possible not only bias, but even your best experts that are reviewing it may not know every one of those cultural communities. And when you bring it to our big board here, you get more people that could catch one little mistake that could give us erroneous data, and that's going to mess us up for a while. So I agree with what she says, but I'm looking at it from me. From my perspective, this looks great.
But wouldn't you say, David, that a lot of that work would be done at the task force level, and that bringing a document like this to a larger body, you could get into like micromanaging and nitpicking words when that should be done by the professional in the subsection. I just worry, I've been on a lot of boards where we get down like a rabbit hole and we start like, spend a whole meeting worrying about whether we say of or they, and you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so just over this. If it's a policy board, but I, like I said, I'm new, I'm not sure if this is that type of working board, if we're supposed to be into that minutia or if we're supposed to be a larger.
Well, and that's the point of having a task force, is that the task force is the working piece of it, just like the advocacy task force is looking at what the policies are, what are the things that we're going to focus on as the larger group for advocacy efforts. So I think the thought that you have is the idea of what this task force works on, and that's why we have it open to as many members as are interested until we hit quorum. And we brought in community members that have more expertise in bringing equity to the process that we're doing. So, and that was a big...
Well, I can just add for you, too, on that task force, and I've been on the CNA task force for, I don't know how many years, but a long time, and there were several, I had issues with how some of the wording was done. And it should be done, as far as I know, at the task force level, as getting into the minutiae of it and all of that stuff. I mean, and then I think that, just like Rebecca said, this body would be able to oversee, and if there's a glaring, like, you know, that's the time to speak up. But other than that, it's take a look at it, the task force did okay with it or not, you know, that sort of thing.
I guess for me, it's like, if it's an acknowledgement, we acknowledge it. I saw it in my email. I read it. I didn't submit it. I took it just so I could see the questions, but I'm not in the target audience. And so, like, I was, like, fine, but if I had concerns, I would have emailed. But if it, Bridget, for you as a chair, you want to bring it to the board and just have us, I guess,
endorse it, support it.
And what if we don't?
Well, then we've got a problem that we need to discuss it.
Yeah.
Because mean, this is the whole board. If the advocacy task force goes off on a wingy, which they won't, then the board is the one. It is still this community action advisory board, community needs assessment, and the survey is a key part of that.
So
if there was a real dispute over it, then we need to resolve.
So could we do an endorsement via email if it's not a motion and a vote? Can we just give a nod so you don't have to have a formal meeting and hold it up? Like once you've seen it?
Yeah, I think as long as it's not a...
We can verify that with our...
But what's the problem in just having
just to be clear, like, you know, and to your point, in this case, you know, like our meeting lined up close enough with, you know, honestly, like, we don't have an issue with bringing it to the board and stuff
and
like that.
One thing to keep in mind, this was done 3 weeks ago.
That's true.
And then it went to translation for 2 weeks, and then it went to printing. So it wasn't just done on Friday, and the meeting is on Tuesday. I mean, we're talking about a month's difference on getting it out. I apologize. I did not send it out to the full board for final review.
I was not calling for an apology. I was just raising the issue. It's not a criticism. It's just on the format of what we do, I think, when we take actions, it just makes sense.
Yeah, we're not against that.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
But I do, in terms of timelines, you know, just especially something as complex as this, just remember, you know, we're translating, just touching what Rebecca said, we are translating into 5 different languages. We're putting it online. There's so many pieces lined up here that even though the period that the survey is open starts November 1st and we're meeting November 5th, like, it, you know, like the domino pieces had to, you know, be lining up like a couple weeks ago, you know, to be able to have the survey open. But conceptually, in general, like, the more you see, the more you know, the more there's consensus on from part of this board, I think it's great. And we would totally be supportive of that.
Is there any way, and it might have, I was on the task force, I'm not remembering exactly, could the survey be sent out to the board just for feedback? And then
yes, and I
was maybe I don't remember.
It wasn't sent to the full board.
Okay,
it was really working within the task force members and getting those feedback. David brought back several points. Karen had it.
So I know we combed through those really intensely and had discussions with the community members and representing different subgroups, and so it felt like we're very thorough. But I wonder if that would help Bridget and just the other members feel like they were more a part of it, if they just provided feedback, and then that could be reviewed by the task force rather than like a vote, which would slow the process down. I don't know if that would make sense for people.
Of those that are sitting here, who was on the board, on the task force, I mean?
David was also via email. He was able to attend, but he did provide some really good feedback.
Well, thank you.
So 4 members in the room. We're on the task force.
And then we had some community members.
And we had 2 separate community members, Ezra with the Community Foundation and Laura Ellsworth with the Council of Homeless.
Yeah. So thank you. Because we did go through, I mean, that was a lot of work, and we did take that feedback. You know,
and the work is not done.
We spent hours,
like...
but after the task force meetings, we actually spent hours like looking at every single recommendation and wording change and stuff like that, and trying to fit it in, consulting some as well. So thank you. Like, you know, this is a solid survey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really proud of the survey that's going out, and it's. It's a reflection of the work that Task Force did. So thank you.
So in the spirit of time, we're gonna move this forward. And we're gonna go to Michael for legislative updates.
So I don't have a whole lot to update specifically on, but what I'm passing out to you is 2 documents. One is the Clark County 2020 legislative priorities. You know, so this is what the counselors have approved, and the county lobbyists will be. I'm going to pass it. Okay. just make sure I have everyone before I pass the staff. And the second document I'm handing out is not current, is from last year, and it's the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance legislative priorities for 2019. So this white one, the Clark County one, is looking forward. The Low Income Housing Alliance, their legislative priorities for 2020 are not out yet. The reason I'm giving them to you is because they will give you an idea of the themes that will be that the Low Income Housing Alliance is looking at continuing to support in their legislation. And that is, continuing the effort to build more affordable homes, prevent homelessness by reducing evictions, and expanding Washington's lifeline for adults with disabilities. So I would expect, in the case of the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, that the specific legislation that they decide on supporting will be in support of those general themes. As soon as that list is published, I will be sharing it with this board. The other legislative priority lists, as they become available, is the Association of the ACHS, the Association of oh gosh darn it, I'm having a
what one?
ACHS. The Association of County Human Services, which is a subset of WASAC, the Washington State Association of Counties. But the Association of County Human Services will have its own legislative priority list. I'm now the chair or co-chair of the Housing and Homelessness Committee within ACHS, and this week in Spokane during the Conference on Ending Homelessness, we're getting together and we're discussing legislative priorities, so I'll be bringing you that list as well. So please look through them, be informed. They will reflect the legislative actions at the state level that I think that as the advocacy task force is looking at, what are the things we support? What do we write letters on? What do we try to influence legislatures on? I think those are the bills that will be in play, and that you'll be able to be informed in terms of the different organizations that touch on the things we work on, where they stand. And I would also suggest for the advocacy task force, As you look for how do we want to do our work, one of the things I would recommend is providing feedback to influence the legislative priorities of these different organizations. Honestly, like the Clark County legislative priorities, that's never going to be the Community Action Advisory Board's legislative priorities. Those appropriately belong to the county, but if there are local issues that need, state legislative action, we can give the feedback via the policy advisor for the county that, hey, these are issues that we're discussing that are touching on our community that we could use some community support. And after discussion with the counselors between the policy advisors and counselors, they could choose to put things on their priorities. Not guaranteed, but that's one of the things that this group can try to influence. Same with the Association of County Human Services, when we're discussing the legislative priorities for the different committees and for ACHS, if you're giving me feedback on what the local priorities are, I can use that, use that to inform those discussions with those other organizational groups. So, for what it's worth. Federal-wise, I don't have a lot of update because there isn't a whole lot going on. David Bradley, who's the lobbyist for National Community Action Foundation, did send out a note earlier, and it wasn't on legislation, but the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is their Office of Grants Policy is looking at all their grants, which is put a setback in the disbursement of CSBG and weatherization funds. The National Community Action Foundation is addressing that. We've not seen an impact on us at local level with CSBG or weatherization, even though this group doesn't deal with weatherization. But that's the only update we've had from NCAP in a while. So that's all I have. And any questions?
Yeah. Well, just a couple things. I'm wondering, is there a definition for what affordable housing is in our community? Like, is there a dollar amount? Is there some kind of language that addresses? Because, like, I see people listing really expensive housing as affordable, and I don't know who's that affordable to, but I would say those of us are lowering them, not so much affordable. And then the other, well, not question, but So we've been working on BIPOC, which is the Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Legislative Work Group here in Clark County. And so we've identified our legislative priorities, and a lot of it is around housing, since we're disproportionately represented in being homeless. So I was wondering, would it be good to send you we've identified locally?
Yeah, I'd love that, and I'd reciprocate with any of the legislative priorities and the groups that we touch on back to your groups, so we can, you know, help coordinate and, like, you know, do our activities informed one by the other. You know, in answer to the first question, when we're talking affordable housing, we're in terms of things like the a housing trust fund, in terms of home, CDBG, you know, whether it's state or local. We're not, we're talking about housing that's affordable to people who make between 80 and 60% of the area median income, and the housing that is created with that public funding usually has to be within, depending on the funding source, like, less than 130% of the fair market rate, you know. So, you know, and the percentages, like 100% FMR, you know, they vary depending on the program and the funding source.
FMR means fair market. And to make it a little less wonky, I think you just say you shouldn't have to pay more than 30% of your monthly income to rent.
Correct.
That's affordable. That's what it should be.
Which kind of reflects a little bit less of the affordable housing term and more of a rent burden idea. So eliminating high rent burdens for people in your community would be more in line with, like, not paying more than, you know, 30% of your rent.
Yeah. So when we're talking affordable housing, thank you, Alicia. That's what we're talking about.
And Karen, do you still have interest in the address task force? And do we need to adjust the time to?
Right. Yeah, I have the interest. I just don't have the time.
Yeah. Is it because of conflicts and we need to look at a different time for the meeting, or?
No, it's just the work that I'm doing right now is, like, project after project.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I really would like your input.
Yeah.
I wanted to be there, but we need to work. But we can at least keep you informed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Next on the list, hi Peggy.
Hi.
There's an update from Peggy.
Great. So I don't make a ton of copies of these, so I have to maybe share.
If you can email me a copy, that would be
sure.
Get it at night.
So what this is, so like I said earlier, this time Peggy Chan, I work for the City of Vancouver and manage our housing programs. And the City of Vancouver has a wide range of affordability options, and it's sort of our highest income I gave you all a quick update of where we're at with the Affordable Housing Fund. And if you live in Vancouver, know that in, you might remember, in 2016, you were able to vote on, it was called Proposition 1 at that time, passed by 58%. The City of Vancouver has been administering it for, this is our third year. And your minutes, there was a synopsis of that in your minutes of what we've done so far. This is the current project we're working on. So in our finance and admin plan, we set aside $300,000 a year that we use to support shelters. And this past year, a lot of different churches have come to meet with the mayor and city staff to talk about asking what the city could do to help them house people that are homeless, and they're specifically looking at shelters. So we did an RFQ, and this was the response to the RFQ. And as you can, the dollar amount that was asked for is over $2 million, and we have $300,000. So we're looking at ways that we could maybe slide some money from one of the other allocation buckets to be able to fund some more of these projects. But these are the ones that came forward. We're really excited to see that there were three different faith-based organizations that came forward. And we work really closely with faith-based organizations in our community to try and figure out how we can help them help folks that are homeless. And we anticipate taking this to council. Council makes final decisions in the City of Vancouver, and we will be taking we have a committee that's looking at, they prioritize the applications, and we'll be taking that priority to council.
Do you know what date that meeting is, Peggy?
I don't.
Do you know when it will be set?
We're working on it right now, because we have our council agenda is really full, so we're trying to figure out if we can move somebody else.
So is the thought that the proposal, you said sliding money from one place to another, is that strictly out of the Affordable Housing Fund you'd be moving it from preservation or construction into homeless, or is that moving CDBG or home money over to fund the shelter?
What I'm looking at right now is using some of the unspent money that we have left over, and it's been from implementation
out of Affordable Housing.
So, Peggy, I know you've moved on from the responsibility around some of these things, but we've been reading a lot about the Navigation Center and the report and then some new rules that are in place. I wonder if I noticed there was a line in that report somewhere that it's possible to open it as a shelter within 90 to 120 days, which I assume is not in the works, but maybe you could give me an idea of what is happening.
Possible to open an overnight shelter within 90 days. That'd be tough.
Yeah.
The City of Vancouver has a conditional use permit requirement, as the county and the other cities, so it would be pretty hard to make that come to fruition. So I thought the article was really well done. If you read the article, you're up to date that Cher is will be looking for another operator, and we'll be issuing an RFP for that this month. Working on that now, so it'll be the Navigation Center is going to be closed on this weekend to do some deep cleaning and some a little bit of construction.
Didn't the city council, and I could be recalling incorrectly, remove the conditional use permit requirements when they did all the rezoning and got rid of
shelters still require conditional use?
Can I just ask something, please?
Sure.
So in the article, and hopefully I read the same article everybody else was talking about, I don't know, it seemed to me, and this is just outside of the box looking in, like there were going to be more rules, more accountability, all of those things. But I didn't get any part of a message that the people that we are serving, that their needs are taken into account. I didn't get that impression at all.
So where, what's behind the scenes and what's really going on as far as the human beings who are in homeless situations and their needs, because they are the ones who don't have a voice.
So I haven't been involved in all of it, but the folks that attend there have been involved in developing the rules.
So what is that?
At the navigation center.
Yeah. So who?
The people that come to the navigation center.
Yeah.
Have been involved in creating the rules.
Oh. Okay.
But I don't know, like, at what level. Just I was at one meeting and the folks were talking about that.
I think the one thing in the report that bothered me the most, I think the interest of this group, is that they made reference to the navigation center as being a privilege. And that really, I think, that tipped me over the top. If any of you see my Facebook post, I'm kind of on a rampage right now. But I can't help myself, and I'm going to constrain myself in this meeting. But
so you're talking about the author report?
Yes.
Which is, yeah, I haven't. That if I've only just skimmed that.
So oh, I've read it.
I'm not very
a few times.
Very.
But it will be interesting to see without an operator what the city does and what population they decide to serve. Because when it was opened, it was for the hardest to serve folks. So they had a place to go, they could use the restroom, they could take showers, have some human dignity. And I'm afraid that with Parks and Recs running it, it's not going to be that way. So I think all of us in this room, if you have an interest in homeless services, should be watching that issue very closely and adding your voice to the conversation. And that's all I will say.
So how it does link
voices.
So how it does link into county sort of services or county funded services, sort of state whatever, is in the intake system. I mean, the report implies that there is a shelter, a day center, and a homeless resource center, which sounded very much like what Council for the Homeless currently does through its intake system. And so I didn't know whether we had updated information on whether that.
So a couple things. One is the county currently funds about $200,000 a year of operating costs for the navigation center as it exists right now. So about two-thirds to half of the operating costs we're funding.
That's just for the operator.
That's what it's for, the operations of the navigation center.
The city has the funding for the utilities, the maintenance,
the
security, which is about, ends up being $400,000.
Yeah, I'm not saying that in terms of a competition of funding for navigation center between city and county. I'm saying that in terms of what is the linkage to county funding in the navigation center that Bridget is discussing. I do not know, and it's not up to, I have no idea. Cher gave their notice. Right now it's still January 31st. I believe it's still January 31st because contractually they have 90 days, notice to give. I think it's up to it's up to the city when that contract gets terminated or not. I do not know about what is the ongoing county funding beyond that, because our contract is with Cher. I don't know that the county would not fund. I just do not know. The other piece, anything else in terms of Alpha Project report, that's, I'm not going to talk about it. It's a report that was asked for by the city. The assessors, however it was chosen, it was the city's process, the city's report, the city's to do with, and we're going to look to, we look to support a systemic approach to that ends homelessness and funds the full spectrum that a system needs to be functional.
So, the services Share provides at the day center, if their contract ends, does that end some funding that the county was providing towards those services? And do you then reallocate those monies?
I do not know.
Okay, yeah.
I think there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought
just
I'd
spend, it's only been 5 days. So
sure.
In all honesty, I feel like this could really be a prime opportunity. So rather than looking at it with a lot of the negativity that may have come out of what has worked and what hasn't worked, I think if, and this is the challenge, if we can recognize that the human being who's walking through the door, I know you guys are going to hear it again, if we treat that human being with the dignity and respect that every human being deserves, that is going to make our programs more effective.
Yeah.
Not because it's the warm and fuzzy thing to do and it makes us feel all good inside when we go to church on Sunday, but because, and not even because we care about the human being. If we take away all of that part, the bottom line is programs will run efficiently if we make that human being that we're serving the guiding principle behind everything that we're doing. And we're not doing that right now. I've worked with enough programs in our county that make the efficiency of the program and the needs of the program far more important than the person that's walking through the door. A perfect example of that, we just had a coat giveaway at Chief Middle School in Battleground School District last Saturday. And when we were setting that up, some of the volunteers involved said, oh, it'll be much more efficient if we just route everybody through this back door and then we can route them through this way and they'll be right out the door. And I said, no, no, no. We need to invite them in, have some coffee, get to know people, and by God, treat people like human beings. And what that does is it eliminates a lot of the problems that we are having at the Navigation Center and throughout a lot of our programs and systems. Until we do that, we're not going to solve this. So I just hope, I just implore everyone to please, as we're making decisions, ask how are people that are being served being treated with the dignity and respect that every human being deserves. And I'll stop preaching.
Amen.
Yes. So Peggy, this $300,000 was a special allocation for shelters this year, or there's a percentage
finance
that
plan divided the money in different categories and shelter. Because we did this in 2016, and the city wasn't involved in shelters. So
right.
It was pretty small.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, your turn.
Yeah, okay.
Take it away.
We are moving on to funding financial reports.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. Okay, so what you have in front of you is the little one is mostly, these funds are blended. It's mostly CHG, HEN, and ESG funds. And we have our little key down here if not everybody knows which funds those are. This is our end of our 18-month contracts. And I know there's people are going to be like, what's that $143,800, right? That's left over. That is the Shares Fast program. And in all fairness to that program, we, in their previous year's contract, they had a contract that was around $16,250 a month. And we asked them to ramp up big time, and we gave them a contract that's $43,000 a month. So that's a huge increase, and I feel like they did a fantastic job taking that on. So they may not have made the $43,000 a month, but they didn't miss it by a whole lot by finishing out at 77% when you increase them by, four times the amount of what they're
using.
And
those are local dollars that we recaptured. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's not CHG money. We did spend out all our CHG grant, all of our HEN grant. The ESG money that we had had prior was all spent. So what was left on the table was a little bit of the local deed recording surcharge funds.
So what happens to that 148?
Oh, Beth has already...
Well, let's not say Beth. Let's not say Beth. Like, the community, so this goes into the RFA that you guys review,
yes.
The contracts that you approve.
So it rolls over.
Yeah. It's already in the new contracts.
Yes.
She was on it.
The big point is that we didn't lose it.
Right.
No.
And that's where CHG is our big deal, is don't send any money back to the
right.
state.
Well, we didn't lose it, and it's not sitting in a pool like looking for something to do.
Right.
Yeah. It's already been reprogrammed, as we call it, in the CDBG world. So anyway, so any questions about the small report for CHG, HEN, and ESG?
What is the FAST program? Was that a question?
It's rapid rehousing, correct?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
And these are funds, so these are spent out through June 30th, 2019. So these are all the contracts that have ended at the end of June. And our new contracts, you'll see that report at the May meeting. You'll see how the spending specifically is. When Rhonda comes in.
Oh.
We'll have the other reports also that give you an idea
of
spending.
I'd love to see this at the beginning, so I know what we did decide.
It's just the financials that
sure.
we do.
Right. This is showing how much we spent, what percentages we're at. It's kind of how people are progressing. But we don't have enough information on the new contracts to give you much of a spending thing. We've only got July and August that have hit our financial system. September is in there, but our new financial system, until something's been paid, it doesn't show up. So there wasn't a whole lot to give you.
So the next one will go 2022. Are they longer contracts?
The next ones are 2-year contracts on the fiscal year.
Yes,
so
July 1.
July 1 of 19 to June 30 of 21.
Oh, okay. I get it.
We have these others, or are 18-month contracts. For the most part, you'll see some, you know, as we maneuvered to get the 18 months and everything as of June 30 to better fit the grants that we have and Commerce's year-end deadline, we have shifted things from a calendar year to a fiscal year. And most of it was done by an 18-month contract in our last funding round. This year, we have the full 24 months of funding. Okay, so now on to the big sheet. So I feel like everyone did a pretty good job spending out. This one includes our community services block grant funds, which is why this board exists. We spent all that money, state and federal. If there's any money left on the table, it was, again, in the deed recording surcharge, the house bills.
And for the most part, people were within a couple percentage points of spending out all of their dollars. The one that you'll see that under Council for the Homeless that has $7,500 left on the table, that's that emergency funds for dislocated families, which doesn't get used very often.
Yes.
And wasn't used in that contract period. Janice Youth also left some dollars on the table for their outreach program for the Perch, and then the Ascend Motel Voucher Program. They try to save those dollars really for the winter months, so to make sure that when it's cold out, they can get youth into hotels while they're trying to search for housing. They held back more than they needed to over the last winter period, and so they had additional dollars that they left, again, recaptured and then re-put back into new contracts.
And on the back side, under share, the $8,000 that was left was the landlord guarantee, and that, again, something that is just for a specific purpose and only spent in those.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. So 8,000 and 7,500 were part of those emergency funds.
So under the Housing Solutions Center, don't we have another organization that sounds, the name sounds like that? the...
Thinking with the Housing Resource Center.
Oh, okay. Because I wonder why I was on the Council for the Homeless.
Yes.
Okay, so they... I'm just... Okay, thank you.
Is there, as far as HEN funding goes each year, is there a way to explain to... So I have people come up to me and ask me what's up with HEN funding on a regular basis each year now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes through this ebb and flow of now it's there, now it's gone, now it's there, now it's gone. Is there a way to like kind of help people understand and predict and know the ebb and flow of what's going on with HEN on a regular basis? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So funding-wise, there is no ebb and flow. It's pretty consistent. The ebb and flow is how many people like come on and off HEN, which is hard to explain because, you know...
because they literally tell people, there's no more funding.
Well, there's no more funding for new people to come on to HEN.
Right, I mean, that's...
Yeah, so I don't know how to explain it other than...
And some people are being told, well, we can't make your payment this month because the money ran out. And so I'm literally hearing like a number of different horror stories.
Can I chime in?
Yeah. Yes,
so there's a finite amount of money. So once you reach capacity, you want to maintain the people who are currently housed. That's, over the years, that's kind of where people get turned out. Turned away because there's not enough funds. And then as people graduate, then we bring more people on. So, So this now thing, so that's been the usual reason why. But lately things have, so then there was another change a while back where we added ADD. And so we spent the money quicker, faster. People stayed on longer because they're currently disabled, and until they get their SSI, they don't graduate, so they just kind of stay on.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of openings. So now we're at a point where we're no longer going to be serving prevention. So we had so as of June 2020, there's going to be no prevention services provided. So, and we're going to focus mainly on just people who are homeless. And so we've figured out a way to wean people off services. Not that the funding is gone. And one thing we never tell anybody is we never tell them the funding is gone, that there's no more money. We say we're at capacity because that's more accurate. So you might be hearing some complaints about people who are on prevention funding who are are going to be weaned off the program over the next several months or longer.
Okay.
The other thing is that they have an opportunity to grieve if they don't... the decision if they feel they need to, and we'll definitely look at that, and we're open to extending people's services. We do find that a lot of the people who are on prevention funding are friends and family and would probably sustain without our assistance if they were let go, and we're finding that to be true. So,
and this is kind of coming on the tail end of a requirement shift from Commerce back in May. They gave notice, and our community providers came together. So HEN is now required to go through coordinated entry process, which essentially means that anyone coming on to HEN has to be assessed and vulnerability has to be prioritized. So essentially moving forward, HEN is going to be targeting people that are literally homeless, so unsheltered, homeless, and persons attempting to or currently fleeing domestic violence.
So the funding for HEN, even in what you're discussing in terms of prevention, isn't being reduced at all. Is as people, I'll say, graduate or like stop being served with prevention, people who are homeless are going to get those resources to get housed. So that's the transition going on there.
But I'm without them. I hear the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
We're out of funding.
I'm not saying that you don't hear it.
Hear it almost.
Yeah, but HEN has been funded. It's continuing to be funded.
And I know it got more money last year. I was up there. I mean, I realized the bigger picture. But the bottom line is, how do I explain that in a way? How do I explain that in the other language that I speak in simple terms? you know, what's going on and why this happens.
There is enough funding for new people or for more people.
And so that kind of gives me
I think Michael's description, which was what, two sentences, is a pretty accurate way to describe that.
Just what Tom said definitely helped because it just gives me a bigger picture of what's going on,
right,
and I can simplify that. So
I just want to add one more thing. under share, it is a little confusing because with the when Commerce switched out ESG money for CHG money, we have like two contracts for the same services in some cases. So you'll see that there's two emergency shelter systems. So you kind of have to add those together: two women's shelters, two day centers. You know, so one says we funded day center, for instance, $84,000, and one says we funded $226,000. We funded $311,000 over 18 months. Okay.
So to clarify that, the reason or two, not that we had two different contracts of duplicated services, is when Commerce replaced, like stopped using ESG, Emergency Solutions Grant Funds, which are federal and are a lot more restricted, and replace them with Consolidated Homelessness Grant Funds, which are state level and are a lot more flexible, we had to end the ESG contract and start a new one with CHG funds, because if we did not do that, the contract restrictions for ESG funds would have continued on to CHG. So that's why for the same program, the same service, you see two different contracts.
So it is a little confusing. Yes. I just wanted to make sure and point that out. If you look at it later, after you've gone home and they're like, what are they doing? That's what happened. And there's big match requirements, et cetera. So we just had to be like, okay, woohoo, you don't have to follow those big restrictions anymore.
So that day center program is the one I was talking about, the funding. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, it was $311,000 over the 18-month period. Okay.
$304,640
plus $226,485.
There's
two lines. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to make sure people understood.
Yeah, I didn't realize that one was too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Share was the only one that had ESG dollars in their contract, so that's the only area that you'll see those two contracts. Where they
I just didn't notice the second line of day center. Yeah.
Yeah. The dates are important here. Dates still left. All right, does anyone have any more questions about this? I feel like, you know, we're still looking really good in the admin and program support percentages. We're under 10% in each category, well under in some. So any other questions for me?
Just fair warning, the CSBG will go up because now 75% of my time is spent on doing the survey stuff. And so all of a sudden I went from a quarter of my time doing community service block grant work to 100%.
I used to be like, spend, and now I'm like, stop it! So.
And it'll be that way for the next year as we go through the needs assessment process. So you'll see it.
When you apply for CSB funds, you put in a specific percentage for admin overhead, don't you?
Yeah.
So it's
and
predetermined? And
well, it's yes, and that's why I'm getting nervous. Because, you know, we're spending out the money faster than we had anticipated in our budget, yes.
And we're expanding what we're doing. Costs have gone up for just general things. With David on the board, we now have interpretation services, though that's an additional cost, recurring cost.
Sure.
Translating into more languages.
Yes.
Chukis and Russian, or Chukis and Vietnamese, are 25 cents a word, with Spanish and Russian are 14 cents a word, so there's a significant increase in those two different languages, plus printing costs for more surveys. But really the overall good is that we are getting more surveys in more languages out into the community, so it's well worth the cost that we're doing.
So does Commerce set the percentage the admin overhead?
With CSBG, it's technically, with CSBG, you can have up to 20% of your entire community action program, which means it's way we could use the entire funding for for admin and program support. But we don't do that. Commerce likes us to try to stay under 16% of the CSBG funds, and we stay below that. Rebecca's putting a lot of time in, but her time does not count as admin for CSBG. It's capacity building. So.
Oh, it's not program support.
It is program support. But they call it agency capacity building now, sure. And a few other fancy names, civic involvement and, you know, engagement.
So all the meetings that I'll be going to.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Thank you.
And in all fairness, with CSBG, we they give you, you know, October 1 is technically the start date. Usually we don't see our grant until November-ish. But they give you, like, 20 months or something?
It's
20?
At least 18.
It's more than 18. It's a little longer to spend it. So we've been not at exactly calendar year. So we're just kind of using some of that money that we usually spend out CSBG in, like, April. And so I'm guessing we're going to be spending out CSBG now in, like, February, maybe January at the rate that it's going. So we have a little room, but yeah, these expensive years are tough after we've done an RFA.
So I see marriage license.
Yes.
BH with zero in it.
790.
Or say, oh, that's your.
I'm looking down.
100,000.
Yeah, it's in the YWCA on that.
Oh,
that's
yes.
So
I'm like, really? Zero, huh?
go basically straight through us to the YWCA safe place.
So when we look at this, we've got CSBG funding.
We've got all the totals are on the second page.
But I'm wondering what funding we get that's local, like doesn't funnel
okay.
through the
well,
state.
Okay, well, if you look at your sheet, anything that says House Bill 2060, House Bill 2163, House Bill 1359, Human Service Fund, and marriage licenses, all on the big sheet,
yeah,
that is all local funding.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
You're welcome. CSBG State, obviously CSBG is federal. CSBG state, ESG was federal, and CHG is state money.
And you won't see ESG on the future reports because we no longer get it.
Right, yeah, that's helpful.
CHG.
Yeah, and HAN is also state money.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, switching gears.
Okay.
Some time.
Thank you. Yes.
Rebecca.
Yes. I just wanted to go quickly over the January meeting. My understanding is that from the last meeting, the discussion we had was some more training on the funding themselves, kind of like an overview of what is local versus state versus federal, what some of those broad requirements are, limitations to those funding. So just kind of a general overview of the funding sources that we get. I also wanted to go over the new dashboard that the Council for the Homeless has put together that's available for anyone to go and view through their website. So we'll give you kind of a preview if you haven't had a chance to see that. But it shows how we're doing on system performance measures for the entire system. It's pretty awesome. They've worked really hard to put that together, and it's a beautiful thing, which we actually use in our quarterly reporting from the agencies, and we'll be putting as part of that quarterly report we put together for you guys. So you'll get snapshots of that in paper form at the meetings. Is there anything else that I'm missing that you guys were hoping to have some training on or discussions on? We'll do an update from the director on our strategic plan, the normal board business stuff that we have to do.
It might be interesting to get an overview of the outcome measures that are required under the new contracts.
Like the system, the system performance
yeah.
measures.
The nice thing about that is they're reflected through the dashboard.
Yeah,
yes.
You'll see that.
Okay, yeah. So,
but we can go into a little bit more.
More detailed mm-hmm. definitions of how this because you see this
yeah.
one line sort of exited successfully and you don't know
yeah.
quite how we measure it, how we track it, and
yep.
how long a time period.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can have
that. That's in plan.
You might want to invite Gwen or Dale to talk about the metrics, because the HUD language is like, just might be helpful for them.
We like Dale.
Well, you'll love Gwen.
Gwen is sweet.
Okay,
too.
I haven't met Gwen.
So we'll see who's a good one. We'll switch to Gwen. Okay. So yeah, no, I'll put that on there also. Anything else? Okay, that's what we will do for the afternoon of the general meeting. Please look for an email. It'll be coming soon. We'll do we'll provide some light breakfast items, and then I'll send out the order forms for lunch. We'll go through the Lifeline Cafe again, so we can support a local agency and the recovery efforts that they're working on. And so we'll get that. So we'll have lunch available for you for the full day meeting.
We're going to Luke Jensen again?
Yes, it'll be at Luke Jensen again.
Do you know what the date is?
Yes, it is on your agenda. It's January 7th, starting at 9 a.m., not at 8 a.m., 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we'll do our elections. We'll do lots of board business. Speaking of board business, every year we have to do the organizational standards. So it's that desk monitoring that I do. I got it done and completed. My assessment says we made 100% completion, but I have to wait for the state to concur with that. So we'll see what they say. It takes them a while to go through all of those pieces of documentation that I submit. There's, I probably uploaded 300-400 documents to show that we were meeting all of our requirements for the org standards, but it has been submitted on time. Very proud of myself on that.
So I was late, so I missed this item around nominations for the CAP executive team. Do we do that at the January meeting?
At the January, we'll actually do the election. So at the and I'll do a follow-up email also. So if you're interested in being on the executive committee, I will send out the descriptions of what it means to be on the executive committee. I've had a couple people interested. Bridget, if you're interested to sit on the executive committee, just let me know. I have interest in the chair position and the vice chair position. The secretary position is also is open. If you're interested in being the chair, of course, it's all a vote. So it goes to whoever. If you're just because I've already had interest in a couple of the positions, please do not feel like you can't put your hat in the ring for those positions. Also, it will be a vote. If we have multiple people for one position, we will do a blind vote. So there won't be any pressure.
We've never had a competition.
Yeah,
this is good.
I also wanted to mention that the WHO shelters are now open as of Friday. They are in need of volunteers, so if you're interested, please get in contact
You guys should have, I sent out an email to the whole CAB board around Outsiders Inn and a link to sign up. On the website, it's super easy. You can do a quick background check submission, and then the communication for volunteer shifts in need is very streamlined.
Let me clarify that, though, but the WHO is not under our umbrella?
Correct, yeah, for other winter shelters.
So, and I was just hearing yesterday that the WHO website does not have actual, it has the same thing as our website, so if you're interested, go to the WHO website and fill it out and turn in your paperwork. There's not an actual contact name at the moment. I think they're in the process of fixing that for just random questions. But let them get your application in the same way you would through us. And if you're interested in severe weather shelter, then go through Outsiders Inn website and do the same thing. Unfortunately, it's two different processes for now. But
just as an FYI, the WHO is down on volunteers. The Family Promise is a new organization here in Clark County, and they're doing where they host 14 individuals at different churches for 1 week at a time throughout the community, which has, so the churches are volunteering locally at their own church for those weeks, and so they're seeing a downturn in volunteers to the WHO. So if you're interested, the WHO services are in need, volunteers are in need.
So
Those
background checks, are they transferable between programs? Do you have to do one for everything you volunteer for?
I believe it's
and how long do they
have to have it on file.
Most people require a separate.
A separate.
So they, because they have to have it on file to show
sure.
that they've done it.
Unless we're collaborating.
And it's just the State Patrol one, right?
I believe so.
The one, yeah.
Watch. I also wanted to let you know that the Salvation Army's new resource building's grand opening is November 15th at noon. It's on 112th Avenue, so if you get a chance to go and see their brand new building, it's beautiful. Some staff will be there also, as we've had some other funding into the building of the building itself. But I wanted to make you guys aware of that. And I also wanted to let you know that hopefully this is the last time that we are scrunched into one little room here. We had an auction yesterday for the Children's Sharing Project. They needed the first room for checkouts. But hopefully in the future, we will have both of these rooms. I believe Janet already has a schedule for this room and C for future meetings. So we won't be so... this is cozy.
And another reminder, I believe it's November 12th. It was on the same email regarding the severe winter shelters and outsiders in opportunity to sign up for the background checks and volunteering. Council for the Homeless is hosting a best practice and community information center. Again, I believe it's on the 12th regarding emergency shelters available in Clark County. So all the year-round shelters, WHO and severe weather shelter system. So if you guys have questions, if you want to learn more about the differences and how they all work together, it's a great opportunity. It's in the evening. If you can't find the email, just go to Council for the Homeless website and it'll be posted up there. It should be at the PHA.
So did I see the Council for the Homeless had put a RFP out for innovative?
Yes.
Yes.
I love that. I mean, that's exactly what we wanted to see happen.
The impact grant?
I mean, this is what we really wanted to see, sort of some seed money out there for new, smaller organizations.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very excited. Yeah.
So, you had to think. Did I?
Is there anything else? I have one more item that's not on the agenda.
I just have an update. I have to leave because I have to go to another meeting, but I wanted to just share an update on the status of the voucher program at the VHA. So as of November 1st, the VHA is using the continuum of care as their referral source for vouchers. Yeah, the technically little bad news about that is that we don't anticipate issuing any new vouchers in 2020 because we are overutilized, and with the increase in rental costs and the market rents, we anticipate that we will probably still be overspent in 2020 for our voucher monies, with the exception of special vouchers. So our veteran vouchers, our FUP vouchers, and our what are called mainstream vouchers, which are for behavioral health. On the good side of that too, we are still in development mode for some special projects. So we've got a couple of behavioral health facilities, housing facilities opening up here in the next month or two, two or three senior properties as well, and then assisted living that accepts Medicaid as well. So that's exciting news.
You're at capacity.
You're at capacity.
We are at capacity.
Oh, this Thursday there's going to be another community conversation at the downtown library about behavioral health and homelessness. So Mike DeLay from Columbia Mental Health is going to be speaking, as well as Tiffany Hayes, who used to be at Adult Mobile Crisis but is now on our outreach team. We're going to be talking about that from 6 to 7:30, I think, on Thursday night.
So before everybody runs, and we're a little ahead of schedule, which is very rare, this is a special meeting for Lydia. This is her last meeting, and we wanted to do something special. So Lydia has 9 years on the board that she's been advocating and helping people in our community, and her work will continue in her other roles. But we wanted to say thank you for all the work that you've done with the Community Action Advisory Board, and so in appreciation for your commitment to the Community Action Advisory Board, Lydia Sanders, January 1st, 2010 to December 31st, 2019, is
not over yet. You have six more weeks. And thank you from the county council. So this is for you, and then a card from the board.
Thank you.
Know that you are still welcome to these meetings.
Oh, I promise you will occasionally. Can I just say something really quick, just to share briefly? 9 years is a long time to be on the board. And when I started on the board, honestly, it was very much a numbers game. It was a good old boys club. And it was very much about, well, we served 500 meals, so that means we're doing our job, right? And it's progressed by leaps and bounds in 9 years to looking at a system and really developing a system that is robust, or having the intention of being robust and holistic and getting to the root of what can really help somebody to be able to make it. As a board, we had problems getting board members to begin with. We had problems just making quorum. So the fact that we have a little playful competition about who wants to be on the executive board, damn people, that has come a long way. So nice job. And the only other thing I want to add is, I know this stuff is super complicated and overwhelming. Don't be afraid to ask stupid questions. The first year, the first 2 years, this is all discombobulated, messy stuff that doesn't make sense to anybody. Ask the stupid questions. That's what means you're wise. And that, the only other thing is, you're here to speak your mind. So do that. Please do that. Because you are the voice. You are advocating for people who don't normally have a voice at the table. So please don't be afraid to speak your mind. You're not going to look stupid doing it, especially your first year or two. I'm really excited to see what you guys have coming up next, and I'm very proud and thankful for the experience that I've had on the board and with what we've been able to do. The highlight for me was including, obviously, the dignity and respect piece in some of our funding. And so I'm grateful for my time. I'm grateful to the county staff with your patience with me, because I know that I could be a pain in the... But thank you. Thanks, everyone.
We really appreciate it.
Dignity and respect thing in all our contracts.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. All
yes.
Our contracts.
So we'll be meeting in January for the big meeting, starting at 9 a.m. and you'll get notices for all of that.
Okay. I would like to thank Lydia for her words of advice. It really gets close to home, since I've been on the board for less than a year. My head is still spinning. it's just amazing. But I am finding that I read the Columbian every day, and I'm beginning to relate and recognize organizations that come up in many articles, so slowly but surely it's beginning to make a little bit of sense. But I think you're right, about 3 years before it all comes together.
Yes.
Thank you for your comments. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We'll see you guys in January.